Welcome, everyone, to Watching Silent Films, where we pick a movie or a series of shorts, silent films, and we watch it and talk about it. And welcome to the podcast, Bob and Lily.
Greetings. Hello.
Hey, guys.
So this week, we're going to finish off the Gaumont disc one from the Kino set, the three-disc set. So then, essentially, it's only a couple of years, 1906 and 1907, and... After that's done, then we'll talk about what's next week afterwards. And have you guys, before we get to that main feature, as I like to call it, have you guys watched anything in the classic realm as of late?
Not the classic realm, of course. I was just watching some stuff on Netflix, but everything's too modern.
Some of the... Alex Guy Boucher material is actually on Netflix. Last Ooh. I checked.
Really?
I don't have Netflix myself, but my friend does. And
for mail away or for live? I mean, for streaming.
Well, of course the DVD, but I don't think they even call that Netflix anymore. But the streaming service has the early women's filmmaking set from Kino, I think.
Wow.
And so a few of those movies are part of the set, and so it's a lot of women filmmakers, including her material. Not the stuff you see on this disc one, but just in general.
Wow.
But that's like the only one, because last time I went to his house was like last year, December or earlier, sometime in the fall. And I searched for it. I just searched for silent films. There wasn't any except for that one set. So... Which is funny because I subscribed to Netflix streaming when it first came out, and there was a ton more silent films. They appeal to not the mass audience, but now they're just appealing to everyone else instead of the niche audience. But that's okay. That's a whole nother topic altogether. Mm-hmm. I would say the dominant, if you're a silent film watcher and you're a fan, I like to think most of them, I don't know for sure, but I suspect most of them like the disc usually, because most silent films are available or as easily accessible as you can on disc versus stream. Because if you want to get a streaming platform that has silent films, well, first, most, like a lot of them are on YouTube, so that's nice. But as we talked about many times before, the music that usually accompanies the silent films on YouTube leaves a lot to be desired. It's not always not necessarily the official version, but not like a really good rendition of a score that you want to attach to the movies that you're watching, which in my opinion makes a big difference, especially watching silent films.
It's like faking it.
Yeah. And so the best is usually still the DVD sets where they, at least somebody has put some thought into it. You know, like if they did, great. Like somebody thought about it at least.
Right.
Gave some thought into it. But other than that, I would say Criterion, the DVD collection company. I don't know if you guys heard of them, but if you buy a lot of movies on disc, they're one of the premier publishers. They don't make the movies, but they just, you know, get the rights to the movies and put them out on physical media. Like they'll create the packaging, the artwork, and make sure the technical quality is good.
Hmm.
Have you heard of them, Bob or Lily?
The company Criterion?
Yeah, Criterion Collection.
You know, yes. I had actually heard of them even before I met you, but I was never actually terribly familiar with their work.
Yeah, so...
now I am.
they started in the 80s, back in the Laserdisc days.
Yeah.
So they're one of the originators of like the bonus content. Like if you had Laserdiscs, right? You could get the movie, but then on top of that, you could have another ancillary add-on disc of like, here's some extra or some material on the disc saying, here's some behind the scenes, like 15 minutes of the directors interviewing what the movie's about. And this is before DVDs, of course, right? In the 80s. And so that was like, that's always for a fan of movies. It's like, wow, this is like a treasure. So anyways, they go back that far. Like, that's when they started. And, of course, over the years, they would start doing stuff like DVDs and Blu-rays, and that's what they're at right now. Long story short, right now they have a streaming platform called Criterion Channel. But I suspect it's going to evolve again because Criterion's parent company is Warner, I think.
Ah.
So at some point in time, when that HBO Max or whatever the name they're going to call it, that's what it is, the first iteration, the next month, next 2 months at the time of this recording, in May, sometime in May, June of 2020, with the Warner Brother Corporation, they're going to create this streaming platform, and they're going to dump a bunch of content on there, including, of course, the HBO stuff, but also on top of that, I honestly don't remember. I think it was... I can't remember the details now, so don't, I won't say what it is. But there's a bunch of stuff coming to it, right, that's owned by Warner Brothers. And I just foresee in the future that Criterion Channel will be morphed or be gone, and then all the content that was on that will be on that other platform. Or maybe this is more like an independent platform. But that's where a lot of the silent films lives nowadays, on that. As well as, you know, a lot of public domain, which is just YouTube and or random video places on the online where you can kind of stream things. And, of course, like the National Film Foundation stuff, you know, for the U.S., they have a National Film Archive. They also host a bunch of public domain films like the Alice Cooper, not these sets, but like in general, silent films that are public domain, they allow you to stream it for, like, film preservation purposes because they have historic significance, right? So there are a number of ways to get silent films over the streaming, but it's not everything, and it's certainly not as curated. I think that's the word I like to use. So if you watch silent films and you enjoy it, disc is still the optimal way because it's a curated experience, right? When you're watching a silent film on disc. Hmm. Anyways, that's just kind of an aside. So, all right, so you hadn't watched anything recently either, right, Bob?
Well, Groundhog Day.
Oh, yeah.
I watched that yesterday with my brother.
That's cool.
I love it. I think it's hysterical.
That's cool.
Now, for the silent film segment that we were watching, we watched, I hope I got this correct, The Obstacle Course Through the Dirigible Homeland?
That's the last one.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it's from there all the way to the end.
It's from The Obstacle Course all the way through.
Yeah, correct.
The Dirigible Homeland, which is
and
the
there's
last
only
one.
2 years.
Yeah.
It seems like a lot of content, but it's actually just 2 years. 1906 and 1907, because... she's about to get married. She was Alice Guy, and now, after marrying Herbert Blachet, she would add that dash to Alice Guy Blachet.
I gotcha.
And then a few years later, she's going to move to America.
Hmm.
Ah.
And so this is the tail end of at least what survived of her thousands of films of her career in the Gaumont studio.
Gotcha. There are 21 segments.
Yeah. So any overall impressions based on that information I gave you?
Do you know who... Were these arranged in a particular order?
I don't know that. I don't know how they...
how they chose, what order
curated
they have
this.
Them.
Because this is published by Kino. Now, Kino is just another publishing house. Very similar to Criterion. Now, Criterion's like... the upper echelon for technical presentation, audiovisual, and Kino's, I think they also do their best, but they focus more on silent films now.
They seem pretty random, but I looked for some pattern, whether they thought it was age or, it's certainly not alphabetical.
Yeah, I don't know because I don't know if they put them out in the date of release. So, like... maybe one of them's January of 1906. The other one is like February.
Right,
in
that's what I was
April. And
thinking. That's what I was wondering
I
about.
don't know for sure because I don't re I didn't research into when these particular
Yeah.
shorts arrived.
Because when you watch them all one after another, you can see very much the differences in quality
Yes.
and settings and but mostly, even I mean the differences, not just the differences between indoor and outdoor, but the differences between sets and the way she did. I mean, I guess part of that is the actors that she got, but some of them are more theatrical, like dramatized, and some of them are very slapstick vaudeville.
Well, I think historically, even the shorts that we start in the beginning in the 1890 somethings, it has always, I think, been theatrical. But I think in the early years, she was
Yeah.
just figuring things out, I would say.
Right. I guess more what I should say is it's more my I feel like it's more of an appreciation I have for her that I think she intentionally, very intentionally, drove at having a certain feel at with each of these films. Some of them are very serious, some of them have very serious feelings in them. And she doesn't make light of everything.
Yeah, I think I think the beauty of watching these films for a specific director like her, where you see her evolve her skills and talents over time and things she learned. Because at the start, I feel like there's a lot of experimentation in very similar ways of like our previous podcast when we talked about
Right.
Edison and the whole Black Maria and like, a bunch of people experimented on short movies,
Yeah,
right?
the previous ones we watched, the really micro, the really, really short segments that were really simply film demonstration. These have much more of a message in them than those.
But also, I feel like entertainment, because
Right.
at that point they're making money, because obviously there's a commerce involved, right? So it's not 100%. It's not like so like those experiments in the early days in the Edison Black Maria studio, and when we talked about that, the exhibition of film didn't come in until probably after 1900. So probably the first half of those experimental shorts, very few, not that they didn't care about it, but it was just like a novelty, I would say. Right?
Gotcha.
Like in
I
America.
gotcha.
So in America,
Yeah.
they're like, oh, okay, that's interesting. But then even those shorts, you could see towards the end, they start to have some story. Like that when we watched that, I
Right.
forgot who the details now because I'm not remembering it, but there was a like a Western almost of the Indian, like there was a chase and
Right. The tribe.
Yeah, exactly. So there is a story, there's excitement, there's action, there's some adventure. And that's
Now,
because the film commerce has started. People were like lining up and
right.
they're going to make
So
some
people were
money.
actually filling in filling in seats to watch this.
Not in the way you see it
Not a
today.
movie theater, right, but
So like the whole notion of the Nickelodeon actually would come even later, but when they started they were in like So like it's almost like remember this is in the middle of the Industrial Revolution where the agrarian society is coming from the farming sort of background into more city and
right.
manufacturing and industrial setting
Right.
and more urban sort of context being formed. When that happened, you have a bunch of people just filing in sort of the density of people started to happen, and when that happens, you usually have main streets, town halls, and those type of situations.
Right.
And after manufacturing hours, the workers, the average Joes, usually want some sort of entertainment, and
Yeah.
not every day, but more often than not, they would go near the town hall main stretches, and in the middle row, like in between, like the barber shop and the grocery store. You would have this either like a storefront or maybe just a large theatrical auditorium room, and in it you'd have a variety of shows, and typically that is based on live performances, vaudeville type, a variety of shows, Like, the Ed Sullivan Show, like, that whole concept actually evolved out of this era of time when people love to watch a variety of shows in person. So even though, like, we think about, you know, the Ed Sullivan Theater and all those antics, right? Mary Tyler Moore, any of those, right? You know these, right?
Right.
So, like, these are variety shows where, you know, they would have people, you know, do different things. And even now, talk shows have, like, when David Letterman was on, he has Stupid Human Tricks or... nowadays they play these games, right? And back then they did very similar things. There's a lot of performance arts, general to variety performance arts, people sing, dance, whatever it is, right? Tricks. Well, they were doing that on stage in person, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that was their normal entertainment even before the manufacturing was happening. That was just like people traveling, you know, entertainment groups would go from place to place. And if you had a night of entertainment, it would go from, like, after work, from after happy hour, 5 to 6, all the way to 7, 8, whatever, right?
So somewhere along the way, we went from those little clips that we went over before, which are purely demonstration of the technology, and then somewhere along the way, between then and now, she was doing it, like, these are, everyone we watched tonight was really to draw in the audience and actually be theatrical. Whereas, you know, the garden party when they had people wandering around was really just to demonstrate the technology. Exactly. They weren't really doing anything special for the camera.
She was doing that for Paris, not for America. She remember that she's in Paris at this point, right?
I said for the audience.
Right. That's what I'm saying is, like, what we saw in the whole... I'm bringing some context because in America we saw that change and happen. And then over here in Paris, for her and artists like her, George Melia was doing the same thing. It evolved over time from experimental into commerce, right?
Right. So I guess I'll ask again, everything we watched in this segment were all done as entertainment.
Oh, for... I mean, even before that, like right before the birth and life of Christ, sometime after 1900s is when the switch happened, essentially. Which is why
it was gradual. It wasn't a switch, right?
Exactly. Because you think about, like, I'm giving you that agrarian society to industrialization because that's what happened was people are used to these types of entertainment.
Yeah.
And when they would sit down and go through the physical theater performances, usually at the tail end, they would tack on these films. Mm-hmm. So you'd have the camera, like the projection ready. And then, like, at the tail end, they'll throw this in. So that's why it's only, like, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, you know, 20 seconds. Because it's at the tail end of the night. It's like a nightcap sometimes. Right. Or maybe it's, like, in the middle. Maybe it's in the beginning. So they have a bunch of acts, and then one of the acts would be the film. Right?
I see.
Nobody, like, actually went to the theater and watched a movie like the way we do today. They would actually go to watch a whole bunch of variety, including this, including magic tricks.
Gotcha.
Including things. They just... It's a mishmash of things, right?
Yep.
Because there's no TV, there's nothing else. It was just the primary entertainment that they were used to.
Yeah. Where I go to vacation every year, we have one night of the week where we do a talent show, and everyone gets up, and it's a variety of talents, and I juggle, and other people sing, and so forth. Some people just do silly stuff to make everyone laugh.
Right. Yeah, and I feel like...
And including... One person actually was an old tradition, showed a slideshow of pictures from past years of the campers. So,
but I feel like that whole notion is actually very primal, like in some ways, going back perhaps thousands of years, you know, like where people just like to congregate and tell each other stories and entertain each other. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So long story short, I'm trying to bring that context into what we're trying to watch today, which is that, you know, it's essentially doing the same thing, is that in the early days, she's doing experiments just like everyone else. But then at some point in time, because, you know, Gaumont's a still photography studio that is now incorporated moving pictures. Now they're selling this to make money. Mm. Right. So it's a commerce. There's a thing in commerce where, you know, she evolves. So it's not just an experiment. Yeah. Also taking the experiment and you're turning into more entertainment stuff, you know?
Right.
And that's where all the things come in, like messages and stuff like that.
So how do you want to do this? Are we going to talk about each of these clips?
I'm going to go kind of recap them real quick, and we'll just kind of take our... But I wanted to ask that question because, to me, I felt like it was an evolution. I don't know when she made the life, birth, the death of Christ, but that 300 extras, it was a huge production. It was a huge amount of money put in. And I feel like, you know, either before or after, there was a turning point in the way that she created movies.
Hmm.
I think after that, she was like, wow, I can do anything. Because, like, that really expanded her palette and what she could do and her skills and her talents, right?
Right.
And certainly in the years afterwards, you know, her talents and skills continue to increase in storytelling, right? That's the only comment I wanted to make for, like, you know, when we did our stop, artificial stop of, like, the sort of the Christ story before and after. Somehow these shorts after seems to just have an air of more confidence in the way they entertain things, you know, the audiences. So let's go with an obstacle course, which is a bunch of people in Victorian context dresses trying to race.
It was very humorous.
Yes. And you could see that she basically had to get a lot of those type of vaudeville people that I just described that used to entertain the audiences back then into the films. That's what most people did. They hired all these people who were on stage. And so when you watch this, it's just they're kind of just channeling what they have been doing on stage. So it's very, very broad, very theatrical performances for that reason, because it's the only thing they knew how to do back then.
Ad-libbing almost.
Yeah, like the wild gestures and, you know, stuff like that. So that's obstacle course. Lily, what do you think?
I mean, it was all right.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah, because I ended up rewatching all the videos before because I hadn't seen them in a couple weeks. So I started it kind of midway at the obstacle course and continued on from there. And that just seeing it all again really kind of cemented what each movie was talking about.
Right.
And I was able to understand a good chunk of the context better. Some of the silent films I was still unsure, like when we get to the Parishioner's Christmas.
Sure.
That one we can talk about more.
Absolutely.
But I agree. This one was fun because I always like how they're all kind of fighting with each other at the end.
And you can tell a huge chunk of them came from those theatrical vaudeville type traditions and experiences.
As soon as you jump
entertainers.
Up and down and raise your arms really obnoxiously, you're like, some theater people.
Like as a performer, if you didn't know how to land and drop, and you could actually get seriously hurt, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that these people actually have done it in the theater so many times, that they make it look like they got hurt, but that's the entertainment value you get out of hiring them, right? That's kind of the whole point of having them perform.
Yeah.
Because they're used to it. You know, as we'll get to other performers like Buster Keaton, who essentially all of his life, including when he was 5 years old, that's when he's 3 or 4 or 5, he started. His parents were in vaudeville and threw him around, you know?
Yeah, and he had
and he learned how to fall.
Learn how to fall quick, otherwise you're going to break an ankle.
Yeah. And so he was an expert by the time we were reviewing The General. So if you have any comments, just, you know, throw it in there. I'm going to keep going here. Madam's Craving, where I want to give some context. She gave birth in 1908, and this is 1906. So she hadn't been pregnant yet, as far as we know. So that's when her first child will be. But it's interesting because, like, she knows about it. I'm sure some of her friends may have had kids, so maybe she has some experience through her friends, but it's pretty fascinating. Also, did you notice, like, the wine and cigar?
Yep.
Yeah.
Played
you
up for comedy, I'm sure.
The pipe.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. What amazed me was that it seemed like it could be the origin of taking candy from a baby.
Like
the first part, she walked over and steals the kid's lollipop.
Oh, just to give us some context for a listener who may or may not be watching these, but the short is about a pregnant woman with a husband and a baby in the tram just sort of walking by out of something, and they walk by a kid with a candy, and she literally took the candy away from the kid. and was eating it. And everything, she has some cravings, right? That's the title. So wherever she goes, she'll just take and steal whoever's stuff and enjoy it, whether it's wine or cigars or something. That's good.
Or a fish from a beggar.
That's right.
I know. She's out of control.
Out of control is the funny bit. But I feel like this is a unique thing, in as well in many of the shorts later. I'm not sure you'll get something like this out of the other types of directors, you know? Like,
it's definitely more playful and comedic.
Very much.
I just mean the cravings of a pregnant woman. Like, who thinks of that? Like, not that you have to be a woman. Not that you have to be a woman to think about it, but I feel like the other guys who are directing it is like probably doing more like the cowboy and Indians or
right.
action or yeah. fighting. They're not thinking about making this funny.
Yep.
Whereas I think this is how she is so revolutionary, I think, at this point in time, is that she's using sort of these real life circumstances and giving some situational comedy to it, which is unique, I think, to just her. And but I think I did check that list. I think I was telling you guys that I was going to check against the list of, so she's made thousands of very similar length short films, right? Mm-hmm. Like thousands. Yep. And this is a fraction of it. And there's a list on IMDb of the like what's available currently, like what you can get access to watch out of the thousands that she's lost, right?
Yeah.
And so what they found and what they retained, what they restored. And almost everything on this list is like 99% of it. There's a few towards the end because this is Gaumont Studio, which is only in Paris. So we're only covering the Paris part of her career. And there's a bunch of movies when she did in America when she ran her own studio called Solax Films. And that era has a number of other films, which are longer, actually. Interesting. We might get to that later, eventually. But so there's more sort of material after this, but this is a big chunk of it. This is probably like the majority of it, I think. Maybe not 90%, or something like probably 70-80% or something.
Yeah, very most of these were only like 2 minutes long. Some of them were more like closer to 5 minutes, but most of them were about 2 minutes long.
Exactly. And so I checked against list. It's probably pretty much all of them. There's a few here and there that we can kind of catch up on later on if we need to, but it's the majority of them. And who knows what else she has been doing, like beyond this, the stuff that's been lost. You keep wondering because her output is so tremendous, right? And if it's so tremendous, this is just scraping at the sort of some parts of the barrel. I don't know where, but anyways, so if you don't have any comments, let's keep going with A Sticky Woman, where somebody was going to the post office and this lady needed a bunch of stamps licked, but she brought her maid or somebody who was
a servant
who was pretty good at just licking stamps, I guess. And then the guy was like, wow, this is interesting, and tried to kiss her, and then his mustache got stuck to her because she had sticky tongue, I guess. I'm not sure.
That's what he gets.
Yeah, I guess.
No consent.
Yeah, exactly.
Made out with her.
But all play for comedy, you know, at this point. So, so any comments about this one?
I just think what Galeski Blachet is doing. She's doing a lot of just kind of out there ideas, and you know all the, you know, like we just said with the mother's cravings. Now we got, you know, this woman with her, you know, licking stamps. They're just all kind of absurd ideas. So I think that's what kind of makes these a lot more fun and makes her more unique, because they're just so different. You're like, why the hell would you even make a movie about this? But it works because you are intrigued by all these weird concepts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I will say a great deal of these are, it's not just like all women, it's a mixture. I think like truly diverse. You know, her films. It's not just like it's all women starring primarily. It's a mixture of men, women, and everyone in between, like dogs and children and animal, like the diversity of the sort of human race that's represented in her films are just crazy compared to a lot of similar types of shorts and tropes around the time. So I thought that part was fairly unique, in that sense.
I would agree with you there. I like the diversity quite a bit.
The Hierarchies of Love is about it. If you have any comments, you just throw in there because otherwise I'm going to keep moving along. The Hierarchies of Love is, I guess, a woman who's kind of going from rank. It
She's
seems
going
to
up
me,
in rank each
yeah,
time.
like, you know, you get the lowest type rank soldier all the way to the highest colonel or captain, whatever the last one is.
Yeah, it's like four different men in one walk, and she keeps going with the new man. It's like, she's a bit of a floozy, I say.
Uh-huh. Thought that was interesting.
Yeah, it reminded me of a more modern film. I can't think of what the name of it is, though, but it's in black and white. It's like a, it has a famous actress in it where she's kind of literally going up the corporate ladder. Because that's what it kind of reminded me of. I really wish I knew the film and the actress, because I want to think it's Marilyn Monroe, but I know it's not.
No, there was a film called, oh, give me a moment. It was Shirley MacLaine.
Oh, that might be it.
And it was, she had like seven different husbands, and they kept getting, they kept dying. What a Way to Go. It's called What
oh,
a Way
no,
to Go.
She wasn't, she was like a secretary in a, like a corporate office building.
Oh.
I think she kept sleeping with all the guys, and she was like, I'm going up the ladder.
Oh.
But
that reminds me
yeah.
of,
oops.
That reminds me of The Secret of My Success.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's maybe that's a film. I don't know.
Well, that's a guy. That's
oh, maybe it's not that one.
That's the actor from whatever. We're getting too distracted.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's what the her this version of this woman going with all these men. That it reminded me of the more modern film, which
yeah.
I wish I knew what it was called.
It's probably like a cliche, I think, at some point when you make enough of these type of movies and shorts, you know, over time it becomes that way.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is The Cruel Mother. It's a, basically about the mother being abusive to a child.
Yeah.
Who
yeah,
I don't know. I couldn't tell if it was.
That one shocked me.
I don't know. I don't remember if it was biological or it was like a stepson situation.
It was,
maybe the,
I think it was a stepson.
Right.
Yeah.
So it seemed like that. It was like the.
Because he was visiting his mom's grave after she.
Oh,
was
that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Him.
Okay, that's remember now.
And he was like. Because, yeah, I mean, I guess this man married this woman and she was treating the daughter like gold, but she was treating the son like he was a whipping boy. So,
yeah.
Like literally beating him, I think.
Yeah, beating him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whenever the dad was not around or wasn't looking.
Right.
And then I think he goes to out to run some errands. To
he
get...
goes to the grave and the policeman finds him and the
right.
policeman brings him to the station. And he tells them the story, and they and the father, he was missing, so the father was already at the police station, and then the thing comes out, and the police go, and the father goes home, and he kicks out the woman, and says, because the police find out the bruise on his arms.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually the most serious in the group, I think.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was kind of stunned by it. There was no humor in that one.
And actually, as a side note for almost all these, very little intertitles. We're basically given
right.
very little dialogue, yet.
And I like that.
You understand pretty much what they're saying, what they're communicating with everything. And so
exactly.
that was quite significant. And the fact that this short dealt with, like, we were just talking about all sorts of variety of subjects that.
Yep.
was not on general public's mind when they're watching movies for even for
right.
entertainment. And they're like, "Whoa, what's this?" And yet I bet these are just common daily sort of happenstance in some people's lives, right? You know,
right.
sometimes these are
yeah.
happening in real life, and to see that on screen and being sort of discussed or even talked about must have been shocking, I think, for audiences who are just like, "Wow, what's this? This is something new." It's like a unique perspective for
a
filmmaker.
It's a subject matter that people don't talk about in general because it's people's private business.
Exactly. Even
so
she's even more just, back then than now.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So even in that era, she was bringing to light what might be considered a taboo subject because people were uncomfortable seeing it.
Right.
I mean, I was uncomfortable seeing it, and I'm much more familiar with the topic.
Yeah. Any other comments, Lily?
I don't know. It just, I think it was at this point, looking at my notes, that it just seemed like a lot of her films at this point, too, seem to end in conflict, a good chunk of them. That was just a note I had written down after watching The Cruel Mother.
Yeah.
Because, you know, everyone's usually fighting, whether it's meant to be funny or there is some kind of argument, conflict. But, yeah, I don't know. The Cruel Mother, it was just, it was definitely, as we stated, it was just a lot. The tone is very different from all her other work.
Right.
And I think out of all the films in this 3-hour set, her, that's probably like the strongest in that type of suit where it's more aggressive.
I think I agree with you, Lily. A lot of them came to physical blows in the end.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah,
but not all of them.
Not all of them, but it was this movie. I was just like, everybody just seems to fight at the end. But that was just my only comment on this.
I think that's kind of not like... I'm not saying like that all great stories end this way, but I think sometimes when you have a story, especially a short one, that goes way too long, and it's really hard to end things, just in general. A lot of movies have great starts, maybe middles, but they don't typically end well, right? The endings of films and stories in general, it's an incredibly challenging hard thing to do, because when you want to end something, you typically want to wrap up the story in some semblance of sense and logic, and also kind of leave the audience with something poignant if you're trying to be serious and saying some, communicate some message, right? But how do you end something like well, right? And this is why for comedy, the Monty Python was the greatest, in my opinion, one of the greatest comedians.
The Holy Grail?
No, I'm talking about the Flying Circus, the TV series. Of course, the movies too, but the brilliance of them, and this is something the interviews for all the Pythons, they've often stated, is that the reason why, because they're young men, they're making something funny, they kept saying, and now for something completely different,
right,
is because they couldn't figure out the punchline. They were just like, they had really good setup, they had good middle, they just, for the life of them, couldn't figure out how to end anything. So their cheat was, and now we're going to just go to the next story.
There you go.
And I felt that way with her, is that, you know, not that she didn't know how to end anything, it's just like, at the end of things, everything's just at the climax, at the highest point, that's when you end it. And I think that's kind of the thing you were making note of, is people were up in arms, right? Even the Cruel Mother and many of the shorts. And then they just go crazy, and then it just ends there.
Except for the Hierarchy of Love. They just go skipping off the screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she ends up with the old guy, and it's like she's really gonna be happy.
So the next one is a story well spun, where a guy's in a, I guess has a barrel for some reason.
It's a hobo.
I couldn't quite tell, but he's at the top of a hill. A great setup. And somebody comes along and says, "Why don't you get in?" And he gets
in. Jokester.
Yeah, jokester, and he kicks the barrel off, and of course, away it rolls, and it goes over many things, right? It goes over people, goes over, crashes into things, on train, I don't remember, but it was a whole
woman on a bicycle.
Yeah. Causes all sorts of mayhem, and she likes to be very, like, nihilistic, maybe mayhem-causing. I think that's, like, a streak in her films. Especially with the comedy she likes to do. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, that one ended weird, because he gets down to the river, they help him out of the barrel, he goes running back, looking like he's going to run back to where he was, and he doesn't get there. He gets to this road, and it just sort of ends.
Yeah, it's hard to end anything.
But I thought it was amusing anyway.
Yeah, all of these are pretty entertaining, I think. Remember, go ahead.
Oh. It's been done so many times. Yes. It's been done a million times, of having someone rolling away in something and on screen. You know, it's like it goes through this merry adventure of rolling away in this object.
Mm-hmm. It's probably pretty common.
It is.
And again, who knows who was first, right, at that period of time. So. And then we keep going, too, and they're all, the comedic ones all tend to have very similar type of sort of chaotic elements like that. The drunken mattress, a drunk. So I guess a woman was cleaning the mattress. somehow, or re-sewing or cleaning it.
Restuffing it, maybe? I don't know.
Something like that. Working on it.
Hmm.
Out in the... outdoors. And a drunk guy happens to just fall in.
It thinks it's a mattress.
Yeah.
It thinks it's like a bed.
Yeah, and then she ends up sewing him inside of the mattress somehow and covers the whole thing up. Because I think she had a drink, too. She went to the bar, right? As far as I know.
Yeah, she went to the bar. She's like, oh, I think I took French. It sounded, I don't know if it said the chocolate bar.
It
or
did.
It was a chocolate wine.
Oh, yeah. Okay. There you go.
Yes, different.
So then, you know, and then, of course, she tried to carry the mattress
that was,
back.
Go ahead, finish.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, she was carrying the mattress back, and it was, of course, moving on her.
Yes, and you know, it was rolling down the hill. It was very similar to the barrel story we just had. And
yeah, but
and
this is the wackiest by far. I mean,
yes.
Just...
Mm-hmm. Well, they're all pretty wacky, I think. But this is, I think when, so the story comes that it rolls every, like, it goes all over the place. It just goes into people's thing. It just breaks everything all along the way, causes mayhem and havoc.
It's so far-fetched.
It's very far-fetched. At some point, she throws it over the bridge.
Yeah, and it lands flat on the road.
I think that's the funniest part for me. I laughed out loud when I was.
And
like,
then it gets hit by a truck.
No, a car ran over it. That's when.
Yeah.
It was like the mattress went over the bridge. So the guy, in reality, could have died. And
yeah.
The car runs over it.
Logically, probably would have.
Right, and that's.
And they pull him out from under the car. I mean, this is pretty absurd.
Yeah, that's the whole.
That was problem. Really, really going pretty far out there, but it made me laugh.
Yeah, I mean,
in the end of that one, when it goes out the window, they end up in a fight.
Yep.
Very violent fight.
And I think, in terms of percentage of the films that she has left over, I feel like. She has a comedic talents here, you know, of the film surviving elements that we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
The percentage of she was able to entertain the audience is pretty significant, I would say.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah, I think she's got a good eye. She is entertaining.
She's got a flair for that. The Parish Priest's Christmas.
There we go.
What was your question on this, Lily?
It just seemed like there wasn't. Maybe I don't really know. Because the priest is looking for money because it's Christmas. Well, it's Christmas, not even Christmas Eve. But then he goes to his maid? I couldn't figure out,
He was actually looking for, he wanted to buy a baby Jesus for the nativity.
That's what I figured. But then I was kind of confused that why he didn't buy it from the other guy. Was it too expensive?
Yes.
Right, that's why he was gesturing to, is there anything smaller? Like, the big one was a certain cost, and maybe it was like, $1,000 or francs or whatever. And then the smaller one, maybe like 200, it's like, well, I still can't afford that.
Yeah.
Right.
And at the end, that's the whole point was at the end is a miracle. The miracle was that, Jesus or the angels delivered the
Mother Mary came
I'm
alive.
Sorry. And... Yeah, I got confused, sorry. It was that, and then the miracle was that the baby Jesus delivered and the nativity thing, and they all bowed down. That's kind of the short.
I did like how they did have that juxtapose with the angels and Mary came to life. I don't know. I just was like, oh, I like that.
That's why I was wondering if it was similar to that timeline of when they were doing the Christ movie. And it was before or after. I don't know.
I like that, too. I was kind of mind blown by that one. I was like, wow, that's a bold move.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mary comes alive and lets him use Jesus.
Borrow Jesus for her.
Yeah.
I think it's,
there you go.
It's just, I think you'll see trace elements of that, her sort of deep Catholicism. I think she's got some commitment to that. Mm-hmm. That's why she's doing that adaptation, this one. And just...
And that one doesn't end with a fight.
Yeah, exactly.
That one doesn't end with a fight.
It's a Christmas one after all.
It is.
I mean.
So we keep going, and then there's the truth behind the ape man, which...
That was so funny.
I'm going to give you a quick summary, was the guy needs a hair loss. So it's a bald guy. He's looking for hair growth.
Hair tonic.
Tonic. So he gets it from a quack doctor or something. And so I couldn't quite piece it together. So he got...
Yeah, me neither.
He got something, and he was like, have it delivered to me, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the maid or the delivery person gave it to her husband?
If you read the sign on the door, he was the concierge.
I couldn't quite get that very clearly.
He was the concierge, so he's supposed to deliver it to the client.
Oh, that makes more sense now. So,
but
he decided somehow,
he wanted a nip.
Yeah, but he was drinking it. It's like, it's a topical element. Why would you drink it? But anyways,
He thought it was good too.
And replace it with water or something else. That's not.
He refilled it with water. Yeah.
Tonic, and then overnight he grew into an ape because of the hair growing elements and the chemical that he drank. Yeah. And meanwhile, the other guys just keep splashing water
repeatedly.
Fall him, he can grow. And so that's kind of the. And of course, the ape man is going crazy, you know, wherever he goes socially.
Yep.
And somehow they have a show. They put him, like, they sold them off to a circus or an act or something, the vaudeville.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was.
They put him in a show, which. That was a bit weird, I guess. I guess the hair tonic had also affected his brain.
It allowed them the inhibition to do whatever he wants. So that's why wherever he was going crazy. He was throwing food at people at one point after that performance.
He came in and jumped on the table and started throwing food at people, yeah.
Like an ape or a monkey or whatever. So
it was cute, though. He drank hair tonic and grew hair all over. So. That's been played many times in television as well.
Yep.
I just thought it was funny because I thought the guy who was wanting to get the hair looked like Danny DeVito, maybe because of his hair cut, because he kind of looked short and stocky.
Yep. I like that. Each time they panned back, each time they went back to him, they played the same music. Like, he's trying again. He's trying again. Yep. He's trying again. They played this cute little music.
And I think it's the same theme throughout almost all these shorts. I thought it was just for the life of Christ, but it turns out I think it's the same for all these shorts. It's the same sort of, not the exact, but it's like different riffs of it. And it's like copy and paste it kind of down the line.
Music was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I was like, I thought that was a unique theme just for the, you know, the Christ short. But then it turned out it was like everything on this disc. So anyways, that's a side note. What was I saying? Oh, so the funniest part was, I think, in that show was when the ball guy finally poured the whole thing on. Like, he was, like, drenched in water at the end and just, like, finally gave up and threw it down.
Yeah.
That was a funny part. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No. I was going to say, he finally thought the guy was a fraud, even though obviously he wasn't because
the ape man.
The ape man just stole it. So the consequences of feminism.
Feminism. What an interesting title, huh?
I like that one.
This is a very high concept, this one.
This was very interesting.
So the summary of the short is that as you're watching the short, the roles that typically women take on, such as sewing, sort of, I guess they're portraying them to be very feministic, acting-wise, on the screen. All the guys on this short was very, like, very, you know, I guess.
Feminine.
Yeah, I guess that's the word. And then they would be sewing. They had to take on that role of child rearing with the kids. And then the women were, like, in the bars drinking. And it's, like, it's literally a typical sort of day, except that the women were doing the man things and then. The men were doing the women things, essentially.
Mm-hmm. It's a typical role reversal, except the men were still wearing men's clothes and the women were still wearing women's clothes, which I thought was great.
Yeah. It was like a huge sort of interesting social message. That's for sure. And then at the end, the men in the women's role revolted or, you know, because they were like, hey, this ain't fair. It's like, well, now you know what women's like.
Yep.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. Any other thoughts about this one?
I think it was just my favorite, but then again, I'm biased because I'm a girl.
It's
just like, I think that's the idea of, you know, equality. Women can do just about everything a man can do, so... You know, what's the difference?
I just found it fascinating because at this point in 1906, she hadn't had kids that, I mean, she must have had friends, I'm assuming, because it's not in her memoir either. I'm just assuming that her circle of friends included mothers. And she may have had insight into family and how men and women take up responsibility in the family in general, especially when kids come along.
Yeah.
And so, like in a traditional sort of family, I guess, at least back in those days, I guess, the men would basically never take care of the kids or clean or cook or just take care of the house and be expected to sew and just do all these different roles, be responsible for the family. And then I wonder if this movie is kind of a response to some of the things that she may have heard, even though she herself at that point may not have experienced it to the same extent. Although I do have to say that her own personal family, like her own siblings, she had three other siblings, and also I think they're all sisters. And then her parents were kind of not there. So she ended up kind of being a mother to a lot of them.
So Lily, do you think this was intended primarily as comedy with, like you said, the like a social commentary?
I definitely think so. It's a type of satire that's really trying to shine a light on the things that are equal but don't want to show that light that they are, if that makes any sense. Because, you know, it's like, oh, women can smoke, you know, they do it all the time, but that's always generalized towards a men sort of thing, or even right. just hanging out at the bars. I mean, women are always in bars, but men go there.
Right.
And it's even the same as, you know, rearing children. That's always a woman's position in life. But right. here's the thing. What if the mother dies? I mean, I guess that's when the husband has to go get a new wife. It's, you know, it's just in the respect of that. She leaves you with two kids. What do you do?
Yeah,
you either have to raise them or find a new wife in like a day.
Right. And the reason I ask is because it's interesting that the issue has always been the issue. I mean, you know, gender-based roles has always been an issue that people are aware of. And what's interesting is that this is just after the turn of the century. And yet when I was a child, let's say in the early 70s, there was still pushback against women smoking. Girls smoking was, you know, even then. I mean, we've talked about this before, about Virginia Slims having the ad, you know, you've come a long way, baby, and they show a woman smoking, and that was risque.
Whoa.
You know, so it's very interesting that we're talking 50 years before that, you know? 60 years before that, almost. And she's making this little film about that stereotype, that societal norm. I think it's really cool, actually.
I mean, that must have been quite a shock from basically the Victorian era, you know, turning into the industrial era.
Mm.
Is one of the main sort of advances, not just sort of, you know, turning tide of history, but also like, I mean, I'm not an expert on feminism, but based on what I understand, there are multiple phases of it, right? There's like, you know, getting the actual laws, the votes, and getting the actual rights to do all these things. But then above and beyond that, it's not 100% the same.
No.
But in some ways, it's very similar to like the slavery idea of like civil war, reparations ended, but then they're still not like treated as equals because,
right?
That's why Martin Luther. It was still happening, like King Jr. It was still happening in the '60s, and even after that, even today, like it's still an issue, right?
Right.
Of equality, and I think it's very similar.
Yeah.
Historic of just like feminism. Yeah, you get the, you know.
There's also so many different flavors and facets to feminism.
Yes.
People even see it in different ways.
Right.
But I mean, it comes through. It's you know, the title, it says it all.
And, I mean, as the only person married with kids here, I can tell that it's still an issue like today. Like, it's still sort of a currently talked about thing that, you know, all married families with, or mixed, it doesn't matter if you're married. It's as long as you have kids, as long as you're like, there's some sort of family structure that's in place, it's still very much a topic today of like, who gets to take care of the kids? Who's cooking? Who's cleaning the house? Who's being responsible for things?
Yeah.
But I guess the thing about it, and without wanting to go too far into psychology because we don't know the person personally, is that the title seems to indicate the consequences of feminism, meaning the end that will be through it. It seems to be visionary in saying that men are emasculated and become subservient to women to a degree. It seems to be what the film is implying. That's why I said it goes a little bit far in the extreme of the example.
Could also be translation. I don't know what the original French was, because remember, it's all French, right?
Yeah, but all the men were clearly subservient and clearly like...
feminine.
Yeah, feminine. Yeah. I mean, well... in the feminine role, but not... You know, when I said the subservient, I meant more the behavior than their actual feminineness.
Right.
They were still guys. Right. They were still dressed like men, but they were acting like... It was a statement about them being the second class citizen, them serving the females. I thought that was great, but odd. Like I said in the beginning, I thought it drew the argument a little far.
That's kind of the nature of these shorts. It allows the topic to kind of
like a drunk rolling down the hill in a barrel.
I think a big part of this was entertainment, right, of its day, like we were saying. So it's certainly a big chunk of it is like to entertain audiences. But I think that the fact that she hid all these things you just mentioned is brilliant.
Yeah,
like it's very genius of just
brave, actually.
Yeah, and that too.
Mm-hmm.
You know. All right, I'm sure we can keep talking about this, but. Let's keep moving on.
Discussion could keep going on.
Yeah.
Ocean studies.
Yeah, I think it's just a documentary shot of like what ocean waves looks like as it crashes on the
beach. It was great.
Rocks.
But it was silent.
Yes.
And it's like you can imagine the sound of the waves crashing on the rocks.
That's the beauty of the picture, you know, the moving picture.
Yeah. So. But the only thing missing was sound.
Yeah.
I didn't even take a note on this one because I forgot about it. It did not stand out.
Yeah. It was just the picture of waves crashing on rocks.
Well, there are this one, and then there's the blimp.
That one too.
I think it's basically trying to present everything that she shot, which includes some documentary type stuff. So, and that's okay.
Right.
Well, next one's The Gamekeeper's Son, where the story is about the gamekeeper who kind of has a family and two kids and stuff, and they get ready, and then he goes out and he, I guess, shoots games with.
No, he's like the warden. It seemed I thought he was, maybe I misunderstood. I thought he was stopping the poachers.
I can't quite remember, but whatever happened, he fell to his death, I think, right? Was trying to cross a bridge and he died.
Oh, okay.
Is that what happened? And then the kid, the son,
I got the impression they killed him.
Yeah.
Which is why they were afraid. But maybe you're right. Maybe it was just an accident and they were out to hide it.
Well, as I recalled, it was like there was this... they were crossing a deep chasm.
A ravine.
Yeah, and then the guy fell. And so I assume he's dead. And that's the dad. And somehow his son saw it. And his son was like, I got to get revenge or something. So he goes to the... He hides and figures out that these guys are the guys that effectively caused his dad's death or somehow killed him. And then he takes revenge on him. And then he, at the end, I remember if he stabbed him or somehow something happened and the guy fell to his death too.
Yeah.
That's the story.
Yeah. I got the feeling that they killed him or that because when they were on their way on the hunting, he seemed to be pursuing them, like saying, stop, you can't go any further. And I think at one point they hit him, right? And he dropped his gun. And the kid went by and picked up the gun and pursued.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I feel, and they came back to town and they saw the mother and the son, and they literally avoided them. It seemed like if it were an accident, they would just go to him and say there was an accident.
Well, but it was, but his dad did fall to his death, right?
Right. But if it were accidental, they wouldn't have hidden it.
Well, so gamekeeper means what? You're
a warden, a game warden, meaning okay. You don't allow poachers to hunt animals.
Okay, so maybe I misunderstood what that meant.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. Be that as it may, he dies on his job, and the son yep. sees it ultimately. And
right.
These two guys, he follows them, right, as they were mourning for their dad. And he catches up with them, and he took a knife. He basically wants to seek revenge, right?
Right.
And there's a struggle, and the cops come and holds back one of the guys, but the other guy, the son, chases. And I think he stabs him, but then at the end, he falls down the same cliff, I assume, as yeah. his dad. And then he gets a pat from the cops, I noticed, at the very end.
Exactly.
And it was like, oh, good job, the bad guys yeah. are gone.
Yeah.
Okay. So I thought that was confusing, but...
Yeah. Well, I think that what he saw, I think knowing his father's job, at least this was my interpretation, he came upon them, he saw them selling the rabbits, giving one to the, you know, at the place to, for the woman.
Right.
And I think he knew that that was what his father was preventing, was that they were illegal kills. And so that's why I think he got angry and wanted to kill him, because they were the poachers. He didn't know at that time what happened to us. Oh, yeah, he did. He right. did know what happened.
He was right he already looked. That's what I was saying.
Yeah, that's right. He already yeah. knew. So,
yeah.
But, I mean, yeah. So it's interesting without words to piece it together.
Yes. That's the beauty of silent films.
Because clearly he believed they did something wrong.
Right.
And I think it was intentional that the way they pulled out the rabbits and showed them to the audience, that it was saying, see, these are ill-gotten goods, you know? Hmm. Maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe I was misinterpreting it, but I thought that to be more like, here, cook these rabbits. We're going to have yep. a meal. Or maybe that was, perhaps I'm just misinterpreting. It's hard to have this without the notes, which... For these shorts, there aren't really a lot of summaries.
You know, they didn't actually cover the accident / murder very clearly.
Exactly.
On that one.
Right.
So that's why it wasn't clear to you and I, was we know the boy saw his dead father when he looked over the cliff. But they didn't show the accident clearly enough to... I thought he just jumped over. I just thought he jumped, you know, a gap. They didn't show him fall.
I think he showed him fall. I remember
they
that.
They did?
Yeah.
Huh, interesting.
It was like, I think he tried to get across and the poachers shoved him or something. Is that right, Lily? You got to double check me. Oh, I can't remember.
I don't. Really know either. I know this one was
different,
a little...
perspectives.
I'm gonna go back after we're done recording. I'm gonna go back and look at this.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking, when you just brought up a good point, but now I don't remember what it was. Because I'm trying to listen. You know, I'm listening to you guys. I'm like, okay, what happened? What was going on?
Yeah. But you're right. It looked to me like the boy stabbed one of the guys before he fell off the cliff. But I looked and I didn't see a knife in his hand. So. Maybe he just pushed him. I don't know.
I think the knife was in the hands. It was just...
Maybe it was in the guy. He's just like, bye.
Yeah. Ah! It was just really fast. And it's really hard to actually catch a lot of it, I think.
It's really interesting that in a lot of these clips, things like that are almost like, by today's standards, over-dramatized.
Right.
Like, if he was to stab him, you'd show him... grabbing the knife and like doing three spins before he falls over, you know. But this was done more subtly, so we'll have to go back and look at it afterwards.
I'm actually doing that now.
Are you really?
Real quick. It's hard to fast forward and rewind and all that stuff.
It is. It's such a condensed clip that backing up and going forward is hard.
Oh, I remember what I was trying to think of. Maybe the idea and the point of not knowing how he died was another commentary about, well, with like real life murders, you have to solve the case.
Mm.
I don't know if we're just missing something from this film because of time and age, and maybe some parts of it have been lost. But you know, with any good murder mystery, you have to figure it out by yourself.
So what happened was the two poachers crossed, and then the gamekeeper pursued them, and he was about to jump onto the
cross. He was about to jump across
the bridge, because there was a piece of lumber.
Yeah.
That bridged the chasm between the high points, and the two poachers had crossed it, and the last poacher turned around, and as the gamekeeper was about to put his foot on the lumber to cross,
yeah,
to pursue them, he flipped the lumber down and he fell to his death.
Did he really?
Yeah, he turned around, stopped, and killed the guy. So,
Okay, that's the scene. Maybe I looked away for those 2 seconds.
And the boy just saw it. The boy picked up his gun and was chasing after his dad, and he saw his dad falling to death, and he saw the murder. So that's the whole vendetta, vengeance, vigilante. Yep.
Okay, that solved that mystery. Now,
yes.
Did he stab him before he went off the cliff?
Well, he still had the knife in his hand. He's running now with the cops after him. And we're like live blocking now. Interesting. There's this piece of film that
got me curious.
It was stretched. Like the chase, one of the chases, it was like a wider screen, and somehow they stretched it back to people more vertical. It was interesting.
When he was running with the police.
Yeah, it looked like there was a knife in there. He stabbed him, and the guy fell.
Ah, okay.
So.
Very good.
Interesting.
Very good. I don't mean very good he stabbed him, but...
Yeah, very good. Very good. Anyway, that's that.
So the next segment?
Yes. So the next one is...
A Race for Sausage.
Yes.
A Race for the Sausage.
Yeah.
That was hysterical. That reminded me of Benny Hill.
We now crossed into 1907, and this is basically about a dog who grabs a really long sausage link, but also very durable.
Very durable.
And basically, for the entirety of the short, runs through everything and causes havoc through everything they cross. And then at the end, people are eating the sausage. Meanwhile, the dog also ate his. And it caused it only a person with a shotgun could shoot the sausage link apart. It was that strong. And then at the end, everybody's eating the sausage, which may or may not be cooked. I'm not entirely sure.
Well, I was not really sure of how strong that dog was, but the first pole that the sausage man ran by holding on to it, I said, why didn't he go to the other side of the pole?
Well, there are a lot of gaffes like that, I think. Like there was
it's a silly clip. You're not supposed to think of the real solution.
No. But like there was a scene where I think the dog went under a bar, but the man with the sausage shop was chasing after his sausage, was holding on to it while the dog was running. Actually goes over the bar.
Oh.
And so how does he somehow, you know.
Yep. Oops.
Yeah, exactly. It's almost like a gaffe.
But I don't know if you've ever watched Benny Hill, but in every episode, it would end with this group of people joining a chase going after him. running off, running out. Because each person that was disturbed by the sausage chase got up and chased the group.
Yeah, it's like a domino effect of chasing.
Yeah.
But I feel like this is probably one of those things that is an act on the stage that they brought to the film.
Oh, that would be hysterical.
Yeah.
Seeing the same group of people run across stage every time with new people involved.
Yep. I mean, it's funny, even just by theatrical standards, so I'm assuming it's one of those that they brought over from those days. I'm going to keep moving here. The glue, where I guess there's a bucket of glue and a jokester kid got a hold of it and starts to take it and glue everything on steps and chairs and bikes. And then whoever, you know, puts a shoe on it will get stuck and the hilarity ensues. So that's the...
Some of
them. And in the end, he got his butt stuck in the bucket.
That's right.
Yep.
But he was still laughing. So
he
that's
was still laughing at the guy on the bicycle. Because the guy on the bicycle couldn't stand up because his hands and his butt were glued to the bicycle.
Yep.
But that was amusing. It made me laugh.
I think that one too.
I think that's why it's just these shorts are the way they are. It's just these are all entertainment packages that people are enjoying as part of the variety shows, you know?
Yep.
So.
Yeah.
And I assume the same thing with the fur hat, the next one, which is a bunch of people just cheating on each other. And yeah.
That one I didn't care that much for. Yeah. I didn't think it was obvious who was who when the man with the big hat came into the first room. It wasn't clear immediately that he was cheating on another guy until the wife says, "Well, get in the cabinet." And then you're like, "Well, why doesn't he get in the cabinet? Oh, he's cheating. Like, she's cheating on her husband." So, it was kind of bizarre. This other woman comes in and gets on the table and gets on the chair, sees him in there, and what does he grab her and pulls her in? And then what's going on, you know?
I think it's just the whole, like, again, it's another, like, many of these shorts, not just her, but many of the filmmakers of that time, they were importing a lot of sets and gags from the theatrical stage realm, and many of these are right. Remember that short earlier a couple of weeks ago about the statue?
Yes,
right. It's the same idea. It's a gag that works, I think, on stage, right? But then when you try to capture it on film, that's why I often say this is kind of like a history.
Okay.
Thing where we capture it and document the fact that these acts used to exist, like on stage, you know, and they're just kind of repurposing it for film because at that point, I don't think she's figured out how to sort of get it off of the stationary realm or even if there was a way and kind of, do a lot of the film language that we now understand today.
Yeah. I guess if I was going to say the reason I didn't like it as much because I just feel like it was not as clear what was going on.
But that might just be part of the fun, is the whole confusion, right? So, especially if you're like on stage, I mean, the purpose is to get a laugh and a rise out of people, you know.
they
might not care who's who.
I just think that people. Well, I think people would laugh better knowing who was who, though.
Yeah, maybe. The cleaning man. I personally think this is the funniest one, because let me give this the short summary. A guy comes in to clean a house. He's so OCD about cleaning it that he ended up being nihilistic and destroying everything in the house. And he cleans it so thoroughly that the floor caves in. And it's so thorough somehow that all of the neighbors falls in through the floor to the next floor, to the next floor. It's almost like a cartoon.
It is.
Like a Wile E. Coyote cartoon.
Yeah.
So, one, like, I'm probably like this, the way I clean the house. I destroy everything, then I clean it. And, you know, my wife doesn't like me cleaning it in this style. two, I just found it so funny that when they started falling through the floor, I just like was on the floor laughing because it became like a cartoon, but with people, right?
Yeah.
And the way they fell too was so comical. Like the guy, you didn't even expect it, and he fell. And then was it cops or somebody or something? He fell, and then a whole bunch of other people fell one after the other. And at the end, there was that guy, the guy on the bed at the bottom floor. I guess they can't fall anymore. He was like, "What's going on?" And of course, everything's destroyed along the way, right? So, I just thought this was the funniest one that I saw out of this whole collection on this disc.
He was completely inept.
Yeah, but I love this. I just love this particular humor.
Yeah, I thought, you know, he just cleans so good. But yeah, it was another fun one too. So I was glad we kind of ended on a high note for all the films.
A 4-year-old hero, apparently. I'm guessing that's a babysitter who falls asleep, right, with the girl.
I think so. Yeah.
In the park, so there was like a 4-year-old girl, and the babysitter takes her out in the park with a jump rope, and she uses the jump rope, but then, because the babysitter fell asleep, the girl just kept jump roping into somewhere else. Eventually, she happens upon some criminals robbing somebody and then uses the jump rope to trip them and then get cops to arrest them, and also help the blind man to cross a bridge of sorts.
Didn't look like a very good place to cross. But...
yeah, but he was a blind guy, right? So,
right.
With the dog. But if you guys remember, but the print was so bad at some point, it was just like
it was half burnt, damaged.
But that's probably the best they could do. It reminded me of that short, the Frozen, what's that called, the thing about the short
Frozen
movie
Time?
Frozen in Time, that's right.
Oh, Dawson City.
Dawson City. Time.
You guys remember?
Oh, that was my favorite. I mean, I loved that documentary. Loved it.
Yeah. But this 4-year-old, that particular print reminded me of some of that footage.
Yeah.
That we saw in that documentary.
Exactly.
And then,
but
it was interesting. Again, very entertaining, you know, for the audiences to watch them like this.
Yep.
The rolling bed where... a guy
it's
was
literally been done in many places.
Yeah, I wonder if this is one of the first. I can't remember.
Yeah.
I don't know for sure, but it's hard to say the first anyways. Yeah. But the story is that a guy was evicted and he has a bed that rolls somehow, and he takes his rolling bed, get out of there, and then somehow a bunch of people congregates him around him saying he can't sleep there, put his bed there on the street in the middle of nowhere, and it goes down a hill and hilarity ensues. So that's kind of the long and short of the rolling bed. Does the car roll over it? I can't remember. The bed?
Does the car roll over it?
Yeah, let me think. There was a... or was it a... it was a probably a different short. I must have written this wrong. But
no, you're thinking of the mattress.
Yeah, probably. But the but he goes, he somehow attaches himself to a train, right? So that's this one.
Yeah.
So that's part of it, and he goes on a lot of the adventures, right, with the bed.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now Woody Allen used that in one of his films.
That's right. Where he might be referencing this? Who knows?
It's very possible.
Some of those filmmakers, they love old stuff, and you know. They're always paying homage to old stuff, if you don't know. What do you guys think of the irresistible piano where a guy is moving and he sets up this piano, starts playing it, and whoever hears it starts dancing like crazy?
That was cute.
Yeah, that was. I was going to say that too. It was pretty cute. Just everybody wants to do a jig.
Yeah, didn't know people were dancing like that in the 1907s.
I thought it was cute when they went up to complain to him, and they walked into the room, and the guy was about to complain, and then all of a sudden the spell hit him again, and he went, let's dance.
And it forced them to keep playing.
Yep.
It's like a foreshadowing the 1920s, the roaring 20s. Finally, well, there's a couple of more. The last one is just a dirigible called the Homeland, the short, or something like that. It's basically a shot of the dirigible pulling out and kind of flying. It's just a documentary, the final one. But the one before that is called On the Barricade, where a kid has to go out in the middle of war to get milk. Yep. And somehow he gets wrapped up into the revolution.
So get milk for his mom,
Yeah, for the mom, right, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that one.
And he
in
gets
the wrong place at the wrong time.
Exactly, and they're executing the men of the revolution, and the kid was like, I promise to come back, I just got to get the milk to my mom.
Yeah.
On my honor.
Now, that one had the words, right? I mean, that one had an inset with the dialogue.
It's still not frequent, but a few of the words, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because it did say that one thing. It said, let me bring this milk to my mom.
Exactly. I think it's like words if needed, but otherwise you can tell what's going on. So that's.
And of course, that's the divine karma, whatever you want to call it. That's the karma sets in because. You figure if he's honest enough to go back to be shot, that he's going to avert being shot.
Right.
But it didn't work out the way I thought it was going to work out. He came back to get shot, and the captain was going to shoot him, which shocked me. I was like, oh, wait there, come on. He needs to be rewarded for being honest. And but it was his mom followed him and saved him.
Yeah, they weren't quite... You don't want to end in an ending where they shot the mom, too. That would be a downer, right?
That would be a downer, big time. They shot both of them. The end.
Fade to black.
Yep.
Well, that's it. That concludes the Gauman Disc 1, Part 3. Well, I call it Part 3 because we did three parts of this. But it was the basically like a big chunk and almost all... It's certainly her... Gaumont career is all on display here with the remaining film elements and prints.
Yeah, the films that lived.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
I guess before watching this, I didn't know what to expect. The only thing I saw of her was the Be Natural documentary. Hmm. And also I read the memoir and sort of knew about her life before even seeing her work, I guess. And, you know, I watched some of the stuff. I don't think I've seen anything beforehand because some of these weren't even available. So I watched a lot of films before YouTube came out. And so a lot of these I just simply didn't have access to. They didn't have DVDs. It was just nothing. Maybe VHS, but I don't think I've even heard of it. It was just so buried, I guess, part of history. But... Since seeing this, I gotta say, you know, not like the greatest thing ever, but also just like a unknown piece of history that's unearthed. And I was glad to have actually seen some of her work firsthand, and I could see why her contributions are significant, artistically, given the context of time that she came out of, you know?
I would agree.
So. Mm-hmm.
And after seeing all of her work, and I feel like, you know, she'd be a very interesting person to sit down and talk to.
Yeah. She was, in her memoir, the feeling I got, she was an avid learner. She never said no to just learning and trying new things and experimenting and just her pursuit of all of that. And I just think that she was an extraordinary learner of things, and the company she kept. I mean, the Eiffel family, the Eiffel Towers, and all those things. I think I read from the book, but like all these people she knew were the Renaissance, and she herself, I think, in some ways, is a Renaissance, and she reinvented herself multiple times. You know, I don't think I fully. Painted her family life picture, I think, in the first part. Maybe I did. I can't remember now. But she basically grew up in an environment where her parents basically weren't there. I mean, large chunks of her life would be spent at schools taking care of by sort of, you know, teachers, nuns, you know, parochial school settings, and just other people that wasn't her parents. And even though she grew up in some parts of her life with her parents, it just felt to me it was like distant, I think, some of the parents. Although her mother came to live with her after a lot of the sort of the her dad's sort of industry died off or something like that. But it seemed like she had just a really tough childhood. And the fact that she kind of survived that and was at the dawn of cinema at the right time at the right place with the Lumiere brothers, whom she knew and was, you know, friendly with as well. It's just, these are all people that were all part of the Parisian artistic / Renaissance culture at that time. And she took sort of that medium and really advanced it, you know, for Gaumont Studio, for herself, but also for the film industry. And that, and looking back, a lot of contributions of cinema that she's done. And she taught Fernando, I don't remember the guy's name, but there was another filmmaker that was very famous French filmmaker. That's actually on Gaumont Disc 2 of his movies, collection of his movies. So I would say, like, you know, her childhood was crazy, and she reinvented herself with this career. And then with this career, it took about 20 years, half of which in Paris, the other half in America, where she reinvented herself again. And after the film career was over, she reinvented herself again as, a mother and raising up a couple of kids. So I just thought it was interesting. I mean, I didn't get the additional glimpses of that in her memoir, but she did try to relocate some of her films from the Library of Congress in the U.S. and wasn't really able to get to any of them.
And she passed away
70s.
Halfway. In the 70s. Wow.
60s, 70s. I mean, at that point she must have been...
She was 90-something. Wasn't she old?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
I mean, she was born in, like, the 18-somethings, right? So, because in 1895, she was, like, 19 or something. So she's already 18, 19 then. So, I mean, you know, can't Amazing. Live forever, Bob.
Right. It's true.
But check out Be Natural. That was the first... documentary that I saw her, which is actually based on a book called Visionary of Cinema or something like that. It was written by Alexis Boucher, Visionary of Cinema, written by, if you Google that title, you'll get the author.
Be Natural.
Yeah, is the documentary, yeah. That's also on Canopy, by the way.
Oh, neat. Yeah, I'll watch that.
Yeah. And, yeah, so any other parting thoughts before we wrap?
It was a nice collection. I know
we mentioned
that, but it's very good to see all this in one stretch.
Yeah. Well, be careful what you wish for, because one of our previous podcasts, I think it was the Be Natural one, you were like, oh, I wish I could go back and watch your stuff. Now you have.
Dreams can come true.
Yes, yes, silly.
It came true. It's on a podcast.
Yeah. There was another person you said earlier on previous podcasts, was it Lois Weber? He's like, oh, I wish I could go watch all our stuff.
Oh, I'm kidding. Might just get that chance.
Yeah, maybe, maybe. All right, folks. That's pretty much it from us this week. The wrap of Alexis Boucher's Gaumont era career. I think at some future time we should try to finish off some of the other stuff of hers, meaning there's probably a few more shorts not in this collection. I think that has been restored and cleaned up and found, I guess, the elements since the release of this disc. So they're constantly finding quote-unquote lost movies. Not constantly, but often enough. because it's right. sometimes in people's attic and they're like they're getting rid of stuff. It's like, oh wait, it's some actually something. Somebody's missing film from hundreds of years ago, you know. Well,
yeah.
So we'll kind of circle back at some future time to finish some of these era off, as well as try to tackle the Solax films. What has survived is probably another maybe 3, 4, 5 shorts, and that's pretty much it. So it's not a lot more, but they are longer, and they have more sort of coherent stories. And the longest of which is called the Ocean Waif. It's about 40-something minutes. And even that is like remnant footage from a longer cut, I think. Mm. But so we'll try to circle back to this again and then go from there. So we're going to wrap today up. So thank you, listeners, for listening to us and also for... being on this journey with going through Alistair Boucher's filmography. And thank you, Bob. Thank you, Lily. You can find more of our stuff at watchingsilentfilmsplural.wordpress.com. That's watchingsilentfilms.wordpress.com. You can email us with thoughts, comments, ideas at watchingsilentfilms@gmail.com. And we shall talk to you next week. Thank you.
Good night.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks,
night. Lily.